For May the 11th, 2018, we talk about Trackmania, learning foreign languages through games, and we ask you about your favorite peaceful moments in non-peaceful games. Welcome to Level 241. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meinsmith.
And I'm Jala Prendes.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We are here. Ben is very rarely not here, but he is currently, I believe, traveling back home. He was up here in Cincinnati.
He was doing pretty bad after the relay. We had to put him down.
Oh, so. Did you have to bring out the curtain? Did we have to destroy Ben?
He was too powerful. Once he realized he could run indefinitely, there was just no way he could remain on this earth.
Yeah, I'm basically repeating my brother and me a bit, but you know that the verb for killing a horse who breaks his leg, you call that destroying a horse, right?
Oh, no way.
Yeah, that's literally he broke his leg at the Derby, so we had to destroy him.
That seems like a real excessively euphemistic.
Seems like a dysphemism to me. Like, oh, you could just say we euthanized him, or we had to put him down. No,
put him out to pasture. Yeah, please,
we bred him so that he was unable to support his own weight.
We replaced his leg with bionics. You know, any of these things. Yeah. No. So you guys did the flying pig
this past relay.
Weekend.
Yes.
The relay. Yeah.
And it was a grand old time. That's the furthest I've ever run in my life.
Nice.
I picked very intentionally the shortest leg, which I found out after I picked it is the steepest leg.
Yeah.
So,
which neighborhood was this? Mount Adams that you were in?
That was through Mount Adams. It was from for all our local boys listening and girls, Mirror Lake up past the Crone Conservatory.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's a hill.
Uh-huh.
But I hadn't been out to the actual course since I hadn't seen exactly where it was. And I think I had just built it up into my mind to be this monster of a hill that was going to destroy me and you know, eat my soul or whatever. And so when I actually ran it, I was like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, that wasn't so bad.
And then I told you far. It's all hills are all mental.
How far was it?
5.3 miles.
Oh, okay.
So technically less than a 10K, but I felt so good at the finish that I committed to running a half marathon with my father-in-law at some point
Ooh.
In the fall. Yeah. So Jala is perking up now.
It begins.
She's like, yes, come to
well,
the dark
see,
side.
Well, okay. Don't do what I do. Do as I say. Normal humans don't need to go any further than a half marathon. A half marathon is a very good distance because you feel like you get some real good work in, but it's not like to the point that you are hitting major walls and all that other stuff. Says the person who was just out.
It's not to the point that scientific studies show that it decreases your life expectancy.
Right, right. No, I think this sounds like something that someone who's going to run a marathon at some point would say. I have no intention of running a marathon.
Well, see, I went from not having run anything ever to running a marathon. I signed up for a marathon just having not run any race at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's possible.
Do people realize that the original marathon runner died?
Did not die. That's a bullshit lie, actually.
Wait, really?
Yes, he did not die. He didn't just run 26.2. Homie ran all the way down to Sparta, asked the Spartans for help. The Spartans didn't want to, so they said, oh, we've got a holiday, and then sent him on his merry way. He ran all the way back from Sparta and then ran from the battleground to Athens, and that last tiny little leg was 26.2. miles, but
so
it wasn't 26.2, it was 25 miles or thereabouts, and the reason why the marathon is 26.2 is because when a marathon was held in London, they wanted to have it go by the palace so that the royals could see it, and so they made it a little bit longer, and that's where it became a 26.2.
What dicks?
Right.
Yeah.
It was a nice round, simple number.
So.
Also, anyway, I think we've then established that even outside of 300, the Spartans were overrated.
The Spartans and the Athenians didn't like each other anyway. So, like, the Athenians are like, come help us. They're like, no, we don't like you.
I want to try. Supposedly, there's actually a marathon in Greece that's like the original more or less course.
Yep, I want to go. We should do it sometime.
That would be cool.
Provided I can talk you into it.
So I'm presuming that Ben did not have to be destroyed. They didn't take out the curtain. Did he do okay?
He did great, as far as I know. I don't know his exact time. But we got to run the last tenth of a mile with him. So we went to cheer him on. And then as he passed, like, my dad jumped out and started running next to him. So I was like, I'm getting in on this. And I jumped in, and we all three of us ran across the finish line together.
Nice.
Which was really cool. And he was tired, obviously, but he was in good spirits. Yeah. Which is good, because he ran the last leg, the anchor leg. And that's, you know, when the sun is the highest. So I think he got more, you know, beaten down by the sun than anyone else did.
Well, he's from Texas now, so he can handle it.
No, so it was great. Yeah, it was as far as I know, everyone is, you know, didn't have any, everyone in our group, I'll say, didn't have any injuries. The most interesting thing was at the exchange point, the first exchange where I started, they didn't deliver any porta potties. And so for a crowd of probably 300 people, there was one bathroom.
Oh, my God.
Rinky-dink little park bathroom.
Nope. No.
Yep. And so there was more than one relayer that came in and was like, where the hell is my partner? And they just happened to be, like, in the bathroom.
No. Yeah, that's untenable. I would get a medevac out of there. Like, they'd have to lifelight me home. Like, no Uber, no anything. Just, like, it's straight home. That's not tenable.
No, it was no good. So they were very apologetic and everything, and it seemed for the most part not to dampen too many spirits. But there were definitely a couple of people that got screwed over.
Ah, geez.
Yeah. Apart from that, though, it was a great time.
Hmm. Well, that's cool. I had a decidedly, less active weekend than you, Ben, or you Dennis, and Ben, or you, Jala.
99% of America did that. So.
Right. No, I, well, I was just good.
Yeah, I was out doing a 50K with my ruck on hills and all that other wonderful fun in Bastrop, which is outside of Austin. But it was, I'll tell more about it when I'm talking about my grind, but because I played a game, a little bit more of a game, but mostly I'll just tell about my adventures. However, I was out there for most of Saturday. So,
Yeah. No, I just went up to Columbus. Second Mabem Bam reference. Went to see my brother, and meet with my brother. So that was fun. What's that? Five brothers.
How many brothers?
Five brothers total. Okay. The two of us, and then the three of them. Gotcha. No, so it was a nice little night on the town. By which I mean we were back home by 10 o'clock.
Crazy.
Not back home. Back to the hotel. Yeah. How about you, David? What's going on?
Not a whole lot. Lots of working. Tai Chi tournament coming up later this month, so a lot of prep for that.
A tournament?
Yeah. So I'll be doing, at least at this one, I'll be doing a group event with the 24 form Tai Chi, and then I'll be competing weapons with a cane form. So hopefully we're trying to get together a actual like sparring team, but probably not for this one.
Yeah, like I was just envisioning a Tai Chi death match, and it was kind of great.
Yeah. It's definitely,
I mean, Tai Chi is technically a martial art also.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, like, I'm just, it's great.
Did someone die of old age?
Whoever moves slowest wins.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, pretty much. I mean,
there's that old joke that, a Tai Chi group, went after practice to a bar, and, a bar fight broke out, and they just, cleaned up, beat down everyone. The only problem is it took half an hour.
But,
As a side note, Netflix, Man of Tai Chi, great movie. Huh. That's only vaguely related. I've started helping one of the guys with their English, which is kind of fun.
Oh, nice.
And then he's teaching me Southern style kung fu, so it's just kind of a thing.
Cool. So
go ahead.
I guess you're taking a little bit of a detour from Salat for a little while, since you haven't found a place over there to go, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately, one of my instructors, students that's trained with him for a real long time, has started teaching in the Bay Area. So it'd be a really great opportunity, but I checked in, the commute would be like 2 hours one way.
Oh geez. God. Yeah.
So the Bay Area is a lot bigger than most people realize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. David, do you have any particular resources that you're using to improve English, or are you just like going for it?
It's pretty much just been like, you know, him being like, you know, pointing at his eyes, you know, eyes, yes, eyes, you know, pointing at his fingers, those are fingers. Like, it's been pretty basic. The guy, the fellow is actually a journalist, Chinese language journalist, but speaks pretty good English. I think it's more just kind of vocabulary type of things.
Gotcha. Okay. Nice. Very cool.
Yeah. So. Well, that's cool. I hope you do good at your tournament.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that is banter. We could go on forever, but we got business to attend to, god damn it. And that business is our usual kind of show, The Brief, The Multiplayer, and The Grind. And why don't we get started with
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. That intro, the world of blank around us, that dates way back to before this show was even about video games.
Was that right?
Yeah, because back in the college radio days when I did, a non-video game show, we had like a little like news, like a weird news thing that eventually became TDRK pretty much. Remember how we had that Portraits of Shame segment?
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah. And I'd open that like, and now it's time for the news where we look at what's happening in the world around us. And then when it became about video games, it's like in the world of video games around us.
So how did we get that instead of like the intro that you guys do in TDRK?
The intro in TDRK was as a different thing. It evolved later.
Okay, I was going to say it was quite the legal battle between Cole versus Cole to retain the rights to the world around us.
I'm a fierce opponent. I'm going to go first because mine is very short. It's more on the realm of follow up. But this is like a heads up for people. Jala, recently you were talking about playing Framed and Framed 2.
Yeah.
In addition to Goa and such. Spotted this news story. Framed and Framed 2 are coming to PC and Switch as a collection. Yeah, in May. So Yeesh. On...
Like now, like this month.
Right, yeah.
Like, shit, it's already May. Whoa.
Yeah, so like May 18th is going to be like $9 on Switch. Who knows what it'll be on PC, probably around that, maybe a little cheaper. Because, you know, stuff on Switch gets upcharged for no reason.
Because Nintendo.
Because we're Nintendo and we can, and fuck you. I love my Switch, but buying stuff on it's a bit of a pain. I'm excited about this. This will be pretty fun. More people can play these if they don't already have a phone that will do it. And based on Jala's reviews, they're worth your attention.
Yeah, they're good. You should play them.
Yeah. And unless we have anything more to say about a traditional classic, Cole mentions the date a thing is coming out story, we can move on to the next one.
You know, it's a good like palate cleanser. It's easy to understand. It's straightforward. It gets you warmed up for the more
in-depth stuff. It's not controversial is the thing, you know? This one is probably not going to be controversial, but it's a little bit more meaty. Jala, tell me about this language class.
Yeah, so at St. Louis University, you can take intensive Italian for gamers. and students taking the gamer
lesson
course.
Lesson one, it's a me, Mario.
No, not quite. So students that are taking the gamer course have been shown to score 3 to 5 points ahead of students in a traditional Italian course. The class is basically currently taught as 30 minutes of traditional instruction and 20 minutes of gaming. Dr. Bregni, I don't know how, he's totally OG. He has been playing video games since the 70s, and he realized that his English improved through the use of video games, and later on he worked as a correspondent reporting on the video game industry. He has been using games in language labs since 1997. He's used anything from Final Fantasy, Trivial Pursuit. Now, I'll tell you, Trivial Pursuit in a foreign language that you are learning is difficult as shit. But anyway, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Heavy Rain, and Rise of the Tomb Raider in his classes, but he's been most successful with Italian with Assassin's Creed 2. Says like he had written a paper for a journal, educational journal, and says, in my Italian Renaissance literature course, for example, students explore Florence as it flourished under the Medici by playing Assassin's Creed 2. My 21st century American students partake in the life of Ezio, a 20-something man from an affluent family, by wandering around in a cultural and historical recreation of 1476 Florence. So he uses the games to reinforce grammar and vocabulary as well as cultural notes. And he was recently given a fellowship grant by the university to develop a language course that's entirely based on gaming, where it's all that. It's not the traditional lecture section at all. Pretty neat. That's another one of those instances of weird shit that I wish existed back when I was in college. I mean, like, I know I recently talked about, like, what was it, World of Something Craft? Like, I don't know. There was a WoW variant that was, like, just for learning.
Like Classcraft, you know? Or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, Classcraft, that's what it was. Something like that. This is another instance of something like that, except this is not a video game that is meant to be necessarily educational, but it is being used that way. So that's pretty neat. And that's actually kind of cool, because that means that all that work that the developers put into making this game accurate to the time period, at least, you know, insofar as architecture and cultural stuff is concerned, like, that's cool that that's being sort of showcased by this professor using that to teach those elements to the kids. So
I'm sure
I'm
sure that this is not how he's doing it, but when I played basically any of the Ezio Assassin's Creed, I would play it in Italian spoken language with English subtitles, because that just felt a little better. I have no ability to gauge how good the Italian is in it, nor did I really get a sense of how good the voice acting was. But, like, even down to regular, I guess for educational purposes, like the simple go here and go to place and do X. You know, that is simple enough, like, syntax to understand and, like, put things into context.
The quest variety.
Yeah, it's Assassin's Creed, but
at the very least, you would learn to recognize when a random pedestrian is about to start throwing rocks at you, which is quite a life skill.
Yeah, you know, and when all else fails, they do have Resquiesca Tempaccia.
Yeah.
Well, the article does mention that he uses it to reinforce vocabulary and grammar, so apparently it does have pretty good Italian. I would not know, but that is a thing.
Yeah, I have a long history of trying and failing to learn a second language. Perhaps infamously, when my high school Spanish teacher told me to stop taking her class.
Oh, geez. Did Miss Martin really kick you out?
Yes and no.
She couldn't control her desires anymore.
Oh boy.
No, I mean, I say it obviously in the way that is most conducive to telling the story. Yeah. What actually happened is she basically said, hey, you're probably not ready for the next class, and with the fact that GPA in high school matters, it's probably wouldn't be a good idea to take it. Yes, technically, she did tell me to stop taking her class. In practice, this wasn't like, you get out.
Right. She didn't kick you out halfway through the year or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I will say that when I was learning Japanese, part of the reason why I started trying to study written Japanese is because I wanted to play import video games. And so, sure. I started with all of the phonetic... the phonetics, all the kana, and went from there into studying kanji. And also because, I would buy import books and I would want to read what was in them. So mm-hmm. I started studying all of that and whatever. I think my overall Japanese level was somewhere in the intermediate range. I was decent enough that I was on social networking sites and stuff. And able to communicate with a bunch of different people in Japan. And then when I went to Japan, I was able to get around fine. Not perfect Japanese, but decent enough. Mm-hmm. And I could read a decent amount. But at some point, I just ran out of time, because I do a lot of different stuff. So I had to drop studying. But yeah, that was the thing that happened. And for a while, I was helping teach people in Japan English. And they were helping me with my Japanese. And I blogged in Japanese. So I have some firsthand experience with learning or studying a language based on, use in the media that you are interested in consuming. Because at least in the case of the games I was playing, the reason I was getting the import games is because they weren't available here.
Right.
Motivation
counts for a lot,
Yeah. And your desire to consume the media is part of what gets you through the study. So, this thing.
Nice.
I think just the non-Latin alphabet would drive me crazy.
Yeah.
Probably.
Not being able to easily look things up.
Well, you can. You just have to know all the radicals and stuff.
Yeah.
So, it requires a larger base knowledge than a Latin language, Latin-based language does.
Meanwhile, I'm happy enough just being a shitty dilettante who only knows enough to offend people.
Well, it's also important to know enough to know when other people are trying to offend you.
Yeah.
I don't think that I personally have never come across any human being that partakes of the network who has ever been offended by you, Cole.
It's happened.
So, I know I have offended people, but that's because I'm abrasive, or I can be abrasive, and I drop shit without, being nearly as considerate and nice about it. I don't worry about it as much, I don't think.
That was an interesting point from the Slack channel. So we're hosting someone from Nepal right now, and I showed him the Nepal map from Overwatch. I was just like, I play this game and Nepal's in it. He's like, really? And I was like, yeah, here, let me show you. And it went great. He's like, this part is very typical architecture for our area. And this is based on this temple, and this is based on this city. And he saw a lot of the connections. And I was talking about it on the Slack, and someone goes, so you showed them a Blizzard game, Blizzard in Overwatch, the same company that took Pharah, an Egyptian character, and put her in a Native American headdress?
Wah, wah.
I was like, that might have been a little high risk right there.
So this is really cool.
One more though. You might not want to do Far Cry 4. That might be a little bit
It's probably the wrong choice.
maybe a little dicey. So let's see, Dennis, moving on here, you've got some news about Runner 3.
So Runner 3, Bit Trip Runner, or Runner 2 if you know the other games in the series, just introduced a new character. which is titled The Narrator, but it's played by Charles Martinet, and it looks like Charles Martinet. So effectively, Charles Martinet is in the game. And why is this relevant, you might ask? It's because you know his voice. He is the voice of Mario.
And it comes full circle.
It's yeah. a him.
Yeah. And so you know, he's apparently been in a couple different games. And this is, he's in a very small group now that has appeared in a video game as himself. The only other person that they could find that has done that is Keith David, who plays Captain Anderson in Mass Effect.
Yes, he played Captain Anderson in Mass Effect, but also he appeared in Saints Row 4 as himself. So he plays your vice president, who is Keith David.
So does this only count if they previously played a video game character?
Perhaps. So that they have to appear in a video game as themselves. I want to say...
Because I was going to say, Saints Row actually does that a lot.
Well, yeah, it does, specifically with Nolan North, right?
Yeah, I was about to say it. Nolan North gets that treatment as well, which is great. But I don't know if he actually appears in the game technically, just his voice is very overtly, I'm Nolan North.
Yeah, and also, like, he will refer to himself as Nolan North during voice lines.
You know, close enough. But this sent me on a Google journey trying to figure out how I could hire Charles Martinet to do voice work for me. And I'm sad to say that after, like, 15 minutes of searching, it is a little nebulous still.
Oh,
so,
well, it's impossible. 15 minutes won't do that.
Guys, can you believe that he's not on Fiverr? I don't understand.
Oh, jeez, Fiverr.
But this got me looking at some of his other, you know, voice credits, which is interesting. You know, he runs the gambit, but the most surprising one, he was a character in Kanan Lynch, Dead Men.
Huh.
Yeah.
I wish that I could filter out his, or, you know, filter out his Mario roles so I could see the interesting stuff.
Yeah.
What was his character in that?
It was the elder brother / Vault Breaker.
Huh.
Okay. So I don't know if that means something to anyone who's played the game. It doesn't mean anything to me. But yeah, if you go all the way down to when did Mario 64 came out in
96.
He actually played the voice of, he was the voice of the announcer / the referee / the boxers in Super Punch-Out.
Hmm.
So, oh, wait, like all of the boxers?
It's announcer / referee / boxers he is credited as.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he shows, oddly enough, the first Mario game that he's credited in is Mario Teaches Typing.
That's crazy.
Which, I guess, does that mean that that's the first video game or the first Mario game where Mario talked? I'm not sure.
Possibly. The first video game where Mario spoke. Yeah, that would have to be.
Maybe a dumb question, but does Mario have, like, the same voice in the Japanese version?
It's super deep. No, I honestly have no idea.
I would be interested to see a reel of that. I'm gonna have to go searching for that. Mario in all the different languages.
I would actually be really, really surprised if they chose somebody different, but also not really surprised. I would feel indifferent if they chose somebody different because Mario is not exactly verbal in the video games. Like, he pretty much says his name and he goes hoo hoo hee hee, and that's
you say
like,
that,
yeah.
But I mean, there's, if you like, it is a thing how hard video game voice work is because you gotta go hoo hoo and hee hee 6,000 times over.
Yeah.
So, and then when you're done, you have to go do hoo hoo and he in Italian too, and so that's like doubling his work there. And can you imagine if he did that for every language? It'd just be crazy.
I don't think he has to. I don't think that's part of the localization work.
what's Italian for hoo hoo?
I don't know. Let's ask Ezio.
He was on Matlock one episode.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Among many, many other games, but Kanan Lynch is the most, like, out of character with the rest of them.
What? Yeah. No, I'm curious about that. So I had no idea that he played the narrator in Runner. Runner, like, those games are very fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, most of the Bit.Trick games are really fun. Yeah, no, I'll play this.
Yeah, God help you if you play on anything with latency.
Yeah, I think I played Runner 2 on Vita. So
Oh, that's good. Yeah, you're set there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, pretty much every Mario game here is on the list.
Yeah. Well, cool. David, you got a story?
I couldn't find all that much other than apparently more people watched the championship of League of Legends than whatever the big NBA something or another was.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah, so like a recent playoff game or?
I don't know. It's all sports ball to me.
Yeah. No, because
the NBA season is like 6,000 years long. So
right. Well, they're in the playoffs now.
They have been since the Mesozoic era. It's crazy.
Yep, it has always been the playoffs. Okay, there we are.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I wanted to take a break from the action this week, so I asked people, what is your favorite peaceful or serene moment from a non-walking simulator video game? And I felt like that was an important stipulation, because there are a lot of video games that their whole thing is peaceful and serene moments.
There's a lot of walking simulators. It's still up for debate whether they're video games.
Oh, geez.
Right. So that's the question.
Yeah. And I'll get us started here with Alexander, who says, this is a super easy question. 2,000 hours into Elite Dangerous, I can safely say that I use it as a chance to just hang out in my spaceship with VR goggles on and relax while jumping from system to system. Some decry the lack of content in the game, but the sensation of having hands on my throttle and stick, and flying a starship the size of a football field is relaxing like no other video game is for me. Sometimes I just park in a system with a ringed system, turn off all the ship systems, and then listen to the sensors chirp.
You should have said, listen to the systems chirp.
Yeah, listen to the system. Yeah. No.
Yeah, that sounds pretty great.
Just the vast infinity of space.
It's amazing how fast that can swap from serene moment to existential dread.
No, especially since now they have like aliens in that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking, what is it? No Man's Sky.
No, like No Man's Sky, everything is so close together, so it's hard to get like that middle of nowhere feeling.
Well, yeah. that's what makes it so horrifying.
None of these planets will get off my shit.
Well, no, you realize again, that Jupiter, even really? When surrounded by, you know, dozens of living creatures, you can still be completely alone in the universe.
Oh yeah,
no, that's just regular life.
Yeah.
Jala, what does Jaden say?
Jaden says, the sequence in Bioshock 2 where you get to see things from a little sister's perspective was a cool pace change, especially given the irony of what is actually taking place around you.
That is a super cool scene, and more people should play Bioshock 2, so I'm not going to give any more detail on that.
I was going to say, I remember playing it, but I forget exactly what was going on.
Hmm. Yeah, I
envy Jaden's tilde.
What? Oh, the N-Y, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Over the N in his last name. Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah. So sorry to put a kibosh on that, but it is a cool scene that Jaden is talking about. David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, the nice countryside walks in Morrowind. A lot of games have done this peaceful nature hike since this one. But this one always is strong in my memory, due to it being first. A lot of the times in the game, you're just walking from place to place and can take in the beautiful views and a setting sun. I played it when it was brand new, and that drove home that sometimes graphics really do help the gameplay.
Yeah.
When he describes like countryside walks, I'm imagining like an actual like trail. Like, are there trails in the game that you just like, hey, start here, it's a 3-mile hike.
Yes. There are roads and stuff you can go on in that game. And I was actually, one of the couple of answers that I had was Morrowind as well. For much the same reason, except like, I would add the little caveat that, except for then suddenly out of nowhere, one of those little worm things would come out of nowhere and just start attacking you. And at least at the very beginning of the game, one of the little worm things can, like, kick your ass. So
yeah, I was going to say, like, I never really found that. I never found that peaceful. That was always, like, prime watch your back time.
Well, then it was funny because then I would see, like, a netch and I would be like, oh, they're so pretty. Kill it with fire. You know, so like,
which one in the netch?
Those are the flying boys, right?
It needs an education mode similar to what Assassin's Creed did.
I mean, mods.
Yeah.
I'm sure there is a tourist mode mod for Morrowind.
Wait. Jala, you think that giant ticks are cute?
No, the netch, it looks kind of like a, sort of like a, I don't know, a jellyfish, a glowing jellyfish that floats around.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like a giant tick to me.
Okay, no.
Yeah.
You're thinking about the, I don't remember what they're called, but the other thing, they hollow out the back of them, and that's what they use for your fast travel in Morrowind.
Yeah, but even that, like the crazy fauna, and even some of the flora, Morrowind helps, you know, heighten the sense of serenity for me. Like, it doesn't unnerve me or whatever, because it does look so alien. It does bring a little bit of novelty to the walk, right?
Yeah.
Dennis, what does Juan say?
Juan says, beach section of Bioshock Infinite. Man, two for Bioshock. Watching Elizabeth go crazy at the sights and scenery, dancing on the pier, and experiencing the world for the first time was a joy to watch. Voice actress sold the excitement and wonder of it all.
Yeah, it's a good scene.
It was interesting to be in Bioshock for a second and just not have shit be completely fucked.
Same. Additionally, like, see the opening 40 minutes of Bioshock Infinite, which I call the God Only Knows section, you know, where you're just kind of like walking around Rapture. The part that I remember fondly and will heap a bunch of sugar on.
So does it start slow?
Yeah,
because I remember the beach scene. I don't remember before that.
Yeah, basically everything leading up to the execution that you walk in
on.
Sure. Yeah. Let's see. Mark writes, the early part of the level Requiem in Halo 4, where you're allowed to take in the damage caused by your crashing into the surface and are given a sparse few minutes to appreciate the Forerunner architecture.
A Spartan few minutes. Come on. We're so close.
Oh, geez. See the previous conversation about marathons. Yeah, Halo 4 is a little bit after my time, but those games can be pretty when they want to be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Jala, what does Raghavan say?
Raghavan says, after the Last of Us giraffe scene, it has to be the first time you see the amusement park in Nier Automata, along with all the break segments before bosses in Thumper.
Yeah, Thumper. Oh, that's the iOS rhythm game, I think.
I don't know.
Sure.
Maybe. Unless they're talking... It is the dark and gritty reboot of Bambi. Thumper gets even. Oh, geez. Yeah, I have not played Nier Automata, so it's hard for me to comment any further. I believe it, though.
How is it that none of us on the show have played that game, I don't think?
What has been the general consensus on it?
Fucking glowing.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
It is not...
I'll have to pick that up.
It is not a reserved or a qualified recommendation like the first one is. Yeah.
Very cool.
David, what does Devin say?
Devin says, chilling in one of my various homes in Elder Scrolls 4, Oblivion, while listening to that Amazeballs soundtrack.
Okay, I'm going to drop a yellow card on Amazeballs. But yeah, the soundtrack in Oblivion is very good. Yeah, throwing one more onto the Oblivion.
Morrowind, Elder Scrolls.
Yes. Yeah, onto the Elder Scrolls, sorry. Because Oblivion was the first one that I played, and like we just called those games Oblivion in the house where I lived. So it's a hard habit to break. Dennis, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, the house you can own in Zelda Breath of the Wild hang out there and chill.
Well, a lot of these people, like a lot of our listeners, rather, these people.
They just want to go sit in their house and have a video game. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, is this a thing where, like, people just want to go chill in their sim house?
They want to have a night in while they're having a night in.
Allow me to introduce you to Animal Crossing.
I don't play Animal Crossing, and I don't play sim games, so I don't know. I don't understand. You already know what I think about Stardew Valley. Like, I have no interest. It's not that I think anything ill of it. I just don't have any interest in it whatsoever. So I don't get it.
I got that. I got the new guide for Stardew Valley. It's so pretty.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You've got to remember how long PlayStation Home was a thing.
Oh, yeah, where you could wait in line to bowl.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Let's see here. Bill writes, the Siege of Madrigal Easter egg in the Citadel level of Halo 3. The sky is a lovely orange color, picture sunset, and Siege of Madrigal, which is a calming piano piece from Myth, the Fallen Lords, an old Bungie game, plays as the player looks at the large snowy field where they just defeated two scarabs and a bunch of Covenant soldiers on the way to stop the Prophet of Truth from firing the ring. It's definitely a calm in between two epic storms moment.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Halo seems to do it well.
Yeah, people are really going for it.
I was trying to think, like, does Destiny have much of that? Like, nothing immediately comes to mind.
They have like hubs. Is it peaceful in the hubs, or are people walking around doing dances and tea bags? Dances with tea bags.
Oh boy.
I mean, that was a question.
I'd say that at least this version of the hub is a fairly like convincingly realized like city, like with people going around doing their things. I think I said that Whistlebot and its incarnation in the second in Destiny 2 is maybe one of my favorite parts of Destiny 2.
Whistlebot.
Oh yeah.
So basically, in the first Destiny game, there's random robots all over the hub, like just repairing things. They sort of remind me of those little worker aliens from Mass Effect.
Okay.
And one of them, one of their like set like commentary they can do is one of them attempts to like whistle and it's just. And can't do it. And then in Destiny 2, in the beginning, as everything's falling apart, you eventually get to this area and there's a one of the robots sweeping, and it does its whistle, except it's like a whole like 5 second long like flute trill. It's like, okay, I see what you did there. Anyways, the fact that that was my favorite part of Destiny 2 may or may not be commentary, but...
Jala, what does Mike say?
Mike says, for me, there's no place like the Normandy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Normandy's good. Normandy's where conversation and bonding happens with your crew.
Also sex.
I mean, after dark. In the captain's quarters. Yeah. I didn't intentionally have you skip, Chris, John. I was just scrolled down.
Didn't we miss Sam, too?
Yeah, we did. I really fucked up.
I was just like, where am I?
David,
did I space out that long?
David, what did Sam say?
Sim said, building up one of the upgradable houses in the Skyrim DLC Hearthfire and filling it with ale/mead/wine and books that I loot from various places so that I can roleplay my character unwinding between adventures.
Yeah. There's another one for the, I think I've talked about it before. In Morrowind, I used to actually just like collect, I want this particular plate with this particular pattern. And for some reason, Morrowind has like an egregious number of different patterned plates and things like that. Like all the non non-weapons, non-armor, unimportant items. Like, there's so many different types, so much variety in the skins they put on those things that, like, the particular plate I wanted was very difficult to find. And so I was going throughout the world scouring it for a specific plate, and I would, like, try to pile them up and stack them just so in my house and everything. So, like, I did that, but I never just, like, sat in the house and just, you know, chilled out. Like, I can see wanting to roleplay it, but, like, I would wish that there would be at least a couple of other people to interact with. I mean, I guess in Skyrim you can get married to one of the characters and they'll just be, like, chilling out in your house giving you money, but...
Wait, is that how marriage is supposed to work?
In Skyrim,
guys, I've been doing it wrong.
Like, what's up, dude? Get yourself a Skyrim mod.
Should be getting more money here.
Yeah. No, I just remember in Skyrim just filling up like chest after chest or armoire or bookshelf after bookshelf with potions and ingredients and stuff. It always looked cool. When I was not in a wizard tower, I made any room I was in into a wizard tower, is what I'm saying. Yeah. Let's see. David, what does Christopher say?
Christopher says, I always loved games that had after-mission hangout locations, like UNATCO from Deus Ex. I just love wandering around, talking to everyone, and checking emails, including other people's emails, of course.
Absolutely.
Before it's back to serious work, picking people off inside giant ventilation shafts.
Someone has to do it.
I love the including other people's emails. That was great. Oh, when I read that, before the episode, I laughed out loud.
Yeah, I mean,
one of my favorite ones of these was the original Perfect Dark.
Okay.
Where you could just wander around like Area 51 and try out like the various vehicles and shooting range and crap like that.
Yeah. I only have experience with Deus Ex on that one. But yes, Deus Ex is good. You go around and harass the little Roomba bots. It's great. Let's see. David writes, a David, not this David here on with us, but the David in the comments. David
you
writes,
don't know this.
walking out of the Shrine of Resurrection and Breath of the Wild and seeing that world laid out in front of you for the first time. Just a brief, peaceful, serene inhalation of the entire world. Yeah.
Do you know at that point that the world is in turmoil? I mean, other than being able to assume it from
you can see a big dark shadow of a thing off over that away, but if you turn the other way, you don't notice it.
Right. It's actually like a beautiful fucking paradise that does not need saving whatsoever.
Yeah, except for that one little area over there, but you can just, like, avoid it. It's fine.
Yeah. Jala, what does Steven say?
Steven says the intro to... Oh, hold on. The wrong Steven. Okay, the first ocean stage of EVO Search for Eden, the non-violent jellyfish and perfect ambient music that I could chill and listen to forever.
I need to add that soundtrack to my list, because that is a very good soundtrack for doing work too.
Sure.
I remember liking it plenty. All those B tier, and I don't say that to denigrate it, it's just all of those non-standard Square games had just like weird and funky soundtracks like that. I can see it.
Interestingly enough, he adds that the soundtrack for that game is actually what brought him to WoW originally.
Oh, nice. Very cool. let's see. David, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, the moment after walking out of Catacombs of Karthus into Irithyll in Dark Souls 3, it is the most breathtaking view in recent gaming for me. And then a giant alligator / rat makes you crap your pants, reminding you, you are playing a Souls game still.
Yeah, that's a very difficult encounter that they just drop on you while you're just kind of like, oh, is that a fountain up there? You're just completely transfixed, and then boom.
I was about to say that you can't cross a bridge that long without knowing that it's coming, though, right?
Like, yeah.
any space that open, there has to be a boss there. And mm-hmm. I was trying to think though, are there areas that are just big and open and peaceful that don't have a trap in them somehow?
I mean, does Ash
some
Lake...
of them the first time?
I mean, if Ash Lake counts, then Ash Lake. In fact, that'll be mine, Ash Lake.
Oh, easy enough. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll talk more about it when it gets there. But yeah. That was you, David. So, Dennis, what does Jonathan say?
He says, after every contest in Pyre, you relax back in the wagon. You talk to your fellow teammates, look at relics, and use the research book. It's a fun break from the hectic game.
From the hectic hoops you have to run. That's right, you run hoops. Yeah, it's fantasy basketball. Yeah. I know nothing about Pyre, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact that there's entire categories of sports games that are just like Football Manager or, you know, whatever, tell you that there's like a strong, you know, worthwhile part to that in-between games piece.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You got to set your concession prices. You have a business to run. Steven writes, the intro to Hellblade was actually really peaceful. I presume that is setting you up for the mind-rending nightmare that you're going to be walking into.
Yeah, it is very peaceful in that you're just kind of paddling a canoe forward.
Mm-hmm.
And it really kind of, it's giving you kind of this big intro to the voices that are going to be in your head the entire time. Not like, hi, I'm the voices, but you're just, you for the first time, you're, you know, moving through a landscape with just voices constantly talking to you in your head, but the voices are not yet really hostile at that point.
Right.
So that is very serene and surreal. Add to it the fact that then you start seeing like dead bodies in the water and on, you know, pikes coming out of the water and stuff. So it's an odd thing to describe as peaceful, but I can see how you get there.
I can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we have something that is going to line up a little bit with that. Jala, what does Jack say?
Jack says, two survival horror anecdotes. I have relaxed to the Resident Evil 2 save room music for a very high amount of combined time over the years. I also have wandered in the streets of Silent Hill, Silent Hill 1 and 2 iterations, for hours once I've temporarily cleared the town of various monstrosities.
Yeah. I can see both of those.
Now, is that because you wanted a serene atmosphere, or is that because you were too scared to move forward?
I don't know. I'm not Jack. I'm not Jack.
Answer for him. Yours is state appointed lawyer.
No, I mean, I can refer to these. I've never been, I mean, I've rarely been too afraid to go forward in a Silent Hill game. Who knows about the first time I play them? That's way back there in the mist. but no, like, I really enjoy the experience of walking around in an abandoned city or moving around in an abandoned city anyway. Most of the time, you only get that in video games or when you drive from one place to the other on Christmas Day. So I get it.
Or any time you visit Detroit.
Oh, yeah. Real estate's real cheap.
That was good.
Then David. Read David to round us out.
Sure. David says, mine would probably have to be the campfire scene just before Xenakarn in Final Fantasy X. They actually Stephen King it by showing it to you in the opening crawl, but you don't get the full understanding of it until you reach the point in the game.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a good place.
Good one, especially because the Xanarkin that you go to is crazy messed up, and that's like basically the end of the game. So it's a nice little reprieve before there. Yeah. No, these are all good answers. Mine, like I said before, Ash Lake, you know, it is a small nothing area in terms of gameplay. There are a couple of basilisks at the bottom of the Great Hollow. There are some of those angry clam men. Who will come up and munch on you. But once you take care of the Hydra, or the Hydras rather, that are hanging around in there, really it's just this crazy, spooky kind of sandbar, and you're looking out over this kind of endless expanse of other kind of like world trees of other, you know, basically what you just crawled down in the Great Hollow, going up to any other number of worlds. It is super serene, and even if it doesn't succeed on a gameplay level, it is still arguably probably my favorite area in the Souls games, even, let's just say aesthetically. Aesthetically, it is the strongest, even above something like Irithyll. Has a very warm place in my heart. Let's see, Jala, how about you? What is your favorite kind of downtime, peaceful area or moment in a non-walking sim game?
Well, I already mentioned the Morrowind bit of just like wandering around until I violently start destroying, you know, whatever is nearest to me.
Tables.
No, usually creatures of some sort. Because they will come and attack you, to be fair. They will come and attack you if you don't kill them first. So if you see them, they must die. But anyway, I would say in Lunar Eternal Blue, there is a pair of scenes. And bear with me and don't react until I finish explaining. Where Lucia, who is one of the main characters, she is from the Blue Star. So she is basically an alien, like a person who has a lot of power but has never been around humans. There are two scenes, one of which is when Hero, the main character, his name is Hero, it's convenient. He is in the bath just like doing his thing, taking a bath, whatever. And then she just like walks into the bath and has no concept of shame or, you know, like surprise or anything. You know, no concept of modesty or gender or anything because she's an alien. She doesn't know anything about human ways. Mm-hmm. And so he just kind of like is freaked out. And then, you know, like Ruby, his little flying cat who has, you know, who is actually a dragon, ends up like getting mad at him because she has a crush on him. I don't know how that works. Anyway, that juxtaposed with a later scene where Lucia is in the bath, you know, after she's been around everybody for a long time, and she's just singing, and she's just like bathing in the moonlight and singing this song that's, you know, really touching. And then Hero, you know, just was looking to just to make sure that she was okay because, you know, they had all these bad guys on their tail and everything, and then sees her and is just kind of like spellbound and just kind of like watching, not being like a lecher, but he just, you know, saw her back and listened to her singing and was enchanted. And then she turns around, sees him, and freaks out, and then, you know, like hides and covers up and everything because, you know, at this point she's become more human, and it kind of shows like the progression of her, you know, changing as the story progresses, then also her relationship with Hero. But it's a really, you know, like emotional kind of scenes that end up playing out, even though it sounds like, you know, haha, it's the lechery bath time gag, you know, that you see pop up and like stuff like that. But it's actually really very peaceful and really really heart-wrenching in a lot of ways,
which
almost sounds Garden of Eden style.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Which lunar game is this? Is the Silver Star?
The second one.
Okay.
The second one, in my opinion, is a lot better than the first game. In both the original version and the remake. The remake of the second game, Eternal Blue, that is on PlayStation, is closer to the original. The first game they totally overhauled when they remade it.
Right. So, they filled the script with pop culture references and stuff.
Oh, they did that in the first one too, but like the original Sega CD version, but like they changed a lot of elements to the story. If you want to hear me talk about that, you can listen to PlayStation Power, the episode about Lunar. I go through all of the differences between everything and talk about the development of the game because I'm really into it.
Right. Yeah. The only reason I ask is because I recall a similar scene in the first one in Silver Star Story, but I had a fake memory of seeing the same thing.
There was a scene where like you have to go bathe in some kind of a spring to purify yourself, but it's not like the dudes are you know, looking in on the chicks or anything. It's just like both the guys and the girls have a bath scene, and then like there's a difference where like the girls have this nice pretty whatever scene, and then all the guys are in like these ridiculous poses and just acting like morons.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, it's
checks
just like
out.
A
sounds
a,
right.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just basically like boys are being boys and the girls are, you know, just happy and whatever and sweet.
Yeah.
So.
Hmm. David, favorite peaceful moments.
Sure. So, a couple of quick things, like in terms of music, definitely, the original Planet Side, had some crazy good music, also crazy good, skyboxes for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. And then, something I'm going to get to in the brief is actually some of the, exploration in, Subnautica or in the grind rather, but
yeah,
I think I'd second some of the Bloodborne, in terms of, you know, the Souls games can look, very pretty, when they want to,
mm-hmm.
In some ways, I think it's almost too bad that, Bloodborne, abandons the like sunset motif, fairly quickly.
It trades it in for Moonset.
I would say though overall, one of them I still kind of miss is just the like traveling and mining and stuff in EVE Online. Super chill. I really like having things like that kind of I can play while, like, you know, watching TV or listening to a podcast or something like that.
Yeah.
And you don't see many games like that anymore. Unfortunately for me, it's just like Eve didn't have enough of like a main game to back that up for me. But it's, you know, still something I miss.
Yeah. Similar to like Elite Dangerous. From the first response,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so the obvious one is the draft scene from The Last of Us, as evident in the picture. But the other one, also from Naughty Dog, that stood out in my mind was, I believe, from the second game.
Oh, man, this is such a good one.
You get done fighting a helicopter and literally like a building falls into another building. You crash through the window, roll into a living room, or I think it's a hallway, hit it and you've escaped. And it goes dead silent. And the only thing you can hear is a clock ticking in the background. And it probably serene by contrast more than anything else.
Was this what game was this?
Uncharted 2.
Okay. You simply said the second one.
Yes. Also the last one. So until they... but the contrast of absolute pandemonium. You take down this helicopter, it crashes into the building crashes into another building, you fall off the roof through a window, and the relief of just the sudden silence.
Yeah.
And the audio gag of just the tick 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 in the background is perfect. It's hard to count it because it's so short, because you're kind of right through the next set of doors and into the action again. But it is perfectly placed.
What I thought you were going to say was the Himalayan Village mission.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that one's good too.
Purely non-combat, but you're just kind of like getting dialogue as you're walking through this just beautifully rendered mountain village.
Yeah, petting yaks.
Yeah. You sound like you were going to add a caveat to that didn't ring for you.
I for some reason the clock stood out more than the axe.
I gotcha.
Yeah, because that village, it was like a solid 5-minute sequence. Like,
mm-hmm.
there's not little to do in that village.
It's just a pleasant walk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you everybody for writing in, for sending us your answers. If you would like to participate in those, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Those prompts go up on Monday afternoons, thanks to Jala and Dennis.
Woo!
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, not Dennis, David. David, what have you been playing since you were
Why
last
not
year?
Me?
Well, David's been away the longest.
neither one of them have been away the longest.
Oh, that's true. David is... Wait, no. Ah, shit.
He's going alphabetical now.
let's go David. Let's just go David. I don't need a reason to do every goddamn thing
seriously.
I do.
I feel like... No, I'm kidding.
So, let's see. A couple of things. Been playing a little bit more Bloodborne. Mainly got the... Oh, what is it? It's like the black eye or one of the hunter's weapons, hunter's tools, which requires you to do a fairly weird kind of pseudo puzzle slash fetch quest. So that's been kind of fun. I'm still running into a brick wall though with the cursed chalice dungeon.
The main, like, not the story one, but you know what I mean, like the one that's on the main path, the non-root chalice dungeon.
Yep.
Yeah. No, the cursed watchdog is a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm stuck on that one, and then on the what is it? It's the electrical like humanoid wolf.
Dark Beast Parle. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, not actually Parle, but the
Vicar Amelia?
No, the so it's, you originally find him as the suspicious beggar.
Oh shit, yeah, I know what you mean. I can't recall his
Yeah,
I can't recall
and then
the
you
name,
have but... to fight him again in one of the Root Chalice dungeons.
Mm-hmm.
So and that one's just hard because like has very few openings, and like almost all of his attacks will stagger you.
Right.
So that one's a little frustrating because, like, by this point, like if I could just like I literally could if his attacks didn't stagger me out of my attacks, I could probably just regain health faster than he could damage me.
Right.
But oh well. So that's just you know, kind of a continuation. It's I foresee that if I truly do hold to trying to get all the way through the chalice dungeons, yeah, just kind of being a continuing thing.
That's a major. So the defiled chalices are a major kind of just wall. Fortunately, right, you are near the end of like the unique authored content. The monster, sure, that you're talking about is the bloodletting beast is what it's called, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, that's been fun. That's actually, you know, kind of become, you know, a little bit of a zen thing. You know, just kind of a little bit of grinding on it each day.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Other than that, played a little bit more of Far Cry 5. Not really all that much to say. I am a little bit interested to see where their arcade mode goes. They have basically a built-in level creator.
Right.
So, you know, those normally, normally tend to, you get just some crazy fan creations. I presumably level one of Doom has probably already been created by this point.
Right.
It's a law of the universe. Of
course. Yeah, you know, as you do. Let's see. Other than that, I picked up Subnautica.
Yeah, I saw you playing this a little bit.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. I don't know. Have you got? I know Dennis has played some. Have you played the Jala or Cole?
Jala?
No.
I've played
Cole,
like I've played like an hour and a half of it.
Okay. So yeah, it's really interesting. You know, I don't know, real, you know, kind of a neat, you know, exploration survival game. I've been pretty surprised, actually. It's because of the the need to manage your oxygen, which is like even at the fairly high end, I think the most you can get, not counting being actually in a sub, is like 3 minutes of oxygen.
Yeah.
It's a real interesting because it's much more of a kind of a short form exploration as opposed to something like, say, a Terraria or even like a lot of the Soulsborne games where you'll be like an expedition could be like an hour or more.
Yeah. The oxygen meter in combination with the inventory limit, as you're exploring or harvesting, kind of enforces a real kind of like up and down rhythm.
Right, exactly.
Well, it kind of reminds me of when I used to live in Miami and I would go snorkeling all the time. It's so like I'd mentioned it when Dennis was streaming and we were doing our little chat on that week that we weren't playing or we weren't recording rather. And, I used to live with an uncle who had a boat attached to a dock in his backyard that was on a canal that went out to the intercoastal. So I was out in the water all the time. So, looking at Subnautica just makes me really miss being able to be in like a real ocean. Sure. So, I don't play it mostly because like I would really, really miss being in the actual ocean.
And overall I feel like that adds to the gameplay, especially instances like there's been a number of real exciting close calls where I got to the surface or to a habitat like right as I was starting to black out, or situations where like I got lost in a cave and had to like very quickly figure out how to get back,
just like real life.
Right, exactly. So I do feel like it definitely adds to it, although I do also feel like there comes a point where I think it might have been better served if they had kind of lightened up on it eventually.
Give you a diving suit, for God's sake.
Well, and especially the area I'm in, I literally have enough oxygen to get to the area I'm exploring, do one thing, and immediately turn around and come back. And
which is a minute and a half each way of walking or swimming.
Right. And it's a thing where, like, because it's underground in a cave, like, I can't get my sub in there. Like, there's not all that much I can actually do to mitigate it. I do feel like there's some downsides. I will say, like, some of the, like, food and water system seems like it's maybe a little bit quicker than it needs to be.
It's always just like my last 30 seconds before getting back to the lab is like grab some food.
Right. And I think some of it honestly is I think it's really like two games or two genres. Like on the one hand, it's a survival sim in the tradition of like a Don't Starve. In the other hand, it's kind of like what we are talking about in the multiplayer. Like there's, definitely a part where like every single fish and, stuff like that you, scan and come across like has its own, lore entry, but at the same time, like it's, as you're reading that, it's going to like, be decreasing your hunger meter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like some of that's a little frustrating. A little bit.
I know in the main menu there is a mode that has no restrictions on oxygen or hunger or anything. I don't know if you can switch to it mid game though.
it just kind of seems like it's at cross purposes. I mean, like, having the limited amount of oxygen, having to go dive down over and over again. Like, I don't think I've ever mentioned this before, but my family historically, long, long ago, the Prendes family in Spain were shipwreck divers. So, that's in my family. And, anyway, like, you know, before there were oxygen tanks, people would literally just like have to dive down, do one thing, come back up, go back down, and like this tedious, tedious process. But that's more of the survival or whatever kind of thing than it is, you know, showcasing all this other stuff that they're doing. I mean, it seems cross purposes to have those two different things active at the same time, like as you're saying, when you're in your menu, and then like meanwhile while you're trying to take in all of this interesting stuff that they've put all this effort into, you know, in the world building or whatever, then, you know, you're sitting here having to deal with all these meters, like that's not so cool.
I would argue a little bit against that in saying that I think there is something to an area or a place being hard to get to or being dangerous, sure, that does enhance the beauty of it.
Yeah, but no, I mean,
I agree. I think it's more I think it would have been better served if they had sort of figured out a way to turn that on and off.
Yeah,
this is a completely different game with like completely different style. But like as an example, I thought that Alan Wake did a really good job with that, with, you know, light areas being, you know, explicitly safe. So, like, for example, I think something that would help a lot would be just if, like, your hunger and thirst didn't decrease while you were, like, in a habitat.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, things like that.
Or even just like while you're in a menu. I mean, come on.
Right, yeah.
You know? So, I mean, like if they're giving you, because basically what that is in order to function optimally, you have to completely forgo, you know, reading all this other material or doing whatever, because that just burns all of your resources to take the time to look at the things that they're giving you, and that doesn't make any sense. So, like, you know, if you're doing a replay or something and you don't care about any of that information, then that would be different. But,
I mean, based on my short time playing it, you know, getting through kind of the early game, like, eventually the game becomes less about kind of surviving, especially on resources like food and water. Like, eventually you just get the ability to make that like on demand, so like you're not just constantly bottoming out and you have the luxury to like look a little bit more. Like the scarcity you guys are describing feels very much like a hallmark of the early game, which is about scrapping as opposed to learning about the stuff, and the luxury of reading those logs comes later, right?
Sure.
Yeah, I think I definitely think there is truth in that. I do think there is a certain degree to which you know, none of the resources respawn. Excuse me, and although fish will respawn, you can fish an area out, and then like there will be very small numbers of them until you spend some time other places.
Right.
And so I will say, though, there is a certain degree to which, you know, some of that can be a little deceiving. Although on the other hand, I'm now to the point where like I just built the submarine. Mm-hmm. And in that, like, I have, you know, that's straight up like a floating base. You know, I have all my crafting stations in there, and I'm growing food and stuff like that. And so, like, now I'm fairly self-sufficient. So, like, there definitely is a point where you reach that, but it's, you know, can be a little more shaky.
Yeah, it's just it's hard for me to go on the ride with wanting it to be. I mean, there are conversations to be had about exactly how you tune the rate of fall. I wouldn't play Subnautica on on the tourist mode, right? And that's not because, like, I look down on, like, oh, it's not hard enough. It's like, for me, without stakes, it feels like the motivation to keep moving and the motivation to engage with more of the systems and see more of the stuff and grow is kind of taken away. Similarly, like, I never felt satisfied playing, like, Minecraft on creative mode. Or sure. I never felt satisfied playing Minecraft without monsters, right?
Yeah.
So I definitely agree. I feel like as you go along, the storyline kind of picks up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, gets a little weirder. You know, it's a little bit hard for me to gauge, but I feel like I'm fairly overtly, you know, getting to the point where, like, the game is, you know, becoming significantly more aggressive in terms of both, you know, there being more commonly just kind of more, you know, just basic predators, you know, sharks and things like that, as well as, you know, enemies that can actually, like, take out a sub or a habitat or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy when you get the sub, it's very much you control it. Like, when basically, you know, you start out swimming, you eventually get the little, whatever the little, like, diver jet, you know, handheld things are. And you can get kind of a mini sub, and all of those kind of control via, like, kind of generic video game swimming controls, you know, a combination of, you know, you move where you're looking and you can kind of strafe some.
Right.
Whereas the sub is, you know, very much like, you know, you can increase buoyancy, decrease buoyancy, you know, forward, back, and turn, you know, so it's much more kind of a tank type of thing.
Yeah.
And similarly, you can either, like, look out your little, like, you know, front, like, view area, or most of your navigating, you're using the cameras that are built on basically your, what they call it, on, like, the smoke, not the smokestack, but you know what I mean. The
periscope.
Tower on the top of the sub by the screw and then, like, on the keel. Mm-hmm. So it's very much a kind of, like, much more emphasizing, like, you're controlling and managing this very large, you know, machine, as opposed to being, like, the driving a mech is just, like, running
around. I'm just
a
dude. Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun, and it's, you know, very sensor focused. You know, you have, like, proximity sensors. You have to control your sound in order to not attract predators. you know, things like that.
Nice.
Yeah, see, that sounds a lot more interesting than, like, the bit that I saw Dennis playing, because that's, like, where my knowledge of the game comes from, is just watching him do that while we were chit-chatting. So
Go on.
I feel like I've got an artificial, not an artificial, but I've got a very annoying wall between my stage and your stage, which is a completely non-intuitive, like, tech tree. I've multiple times gotten into, like, okay, I know I need a radiation suit. This is my current one. I know I need a radiation suit. I mouse over to see, okay, wiring kit, like fiber mesh. I can find wiring kit, but that's three other things that then have three other things each that they're made of, and I can't find fiber mesh at all. There's no search function. There's no, like, I think of League of Legends, where if you just click on the end weapon you want to build, it will show you the entire tree to get there in one place. And that needs to exist in Subnautica.
Yeah, the current crafting interface is dog balls.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it's also aggravated by the fact that, like, the unlock system is very, very opaque. You know, a lot of it, you unlock things by like scanning various things in the environment.
But there's no easy way to remember what you've scanned and what you haven't.
I'm
preaching to the choir, and I feel bad that Ben isn't on to defend it.
So any living thing you can only scan once. Anything after that, any of the tech, if you scanned it and you already have its technology, you'll get some resources. Mm-hmm. But one of the other things is like certain blueprints just like sometimes unlock. Like very explicitly, it's like after a while, you've met some conditions or something, and like when you go back to your crafting station, it will notify you that it's unlocked some new blueprints.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and whether the thing is personal equipment or technology, good luck guessing.
Yeah,
it's different places in the crafting.
Even weirder once you start building bases, because then there is the actual building of the bases is a completely different tech menu. However, some but not all of the rooms that go in the base are actually deployables that are in the first menu. Like it has some issues. I would say two things. Like there is some point. Like right now, I am at a point. Like I just got at a point where like I had no idea what I was supposed to be doing, and like I just straight up looked at the wiki. Like where do I get this resource? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Although I will say, like as much as like I complain about this stuff, like I very much do recommend this game. Like I don't want to be excited at that.
Yeah, the portion that I played on air was fantastic, and just left her, was really excited about it. And then I went back and played non-streaming just to I had some time and wanted to play more because I liked my first stint with it, and it was a completely different experience. Like I spent the entire time searching for like one material, and then trying to figure out where fiber mesh was in my tech tree, and then after realizing that it wasn't in there, period. Being completely lost as to how to go forward. So
a lot of it is, obviously, scan everything. The non-tech scans are very much, and like resources are very much broken up by environment. So looking in a kelp forest versus a cave versus a reef, those sorts of things. And then also, just as you're trolling around, like, keeping an eye out for wreckage. That's kind of the overall cycle. It definitely does have some issues. Something I do like is that, it does get into doing some interesting, moving you to like some of the deep ocean rift type environments and stuff like that. They're kind of cool.
Sure.
There's also at least one enemy that I think is one of my favorite enemies of any game I've played, but I feel like I don't really want to spoil it.
Yeah.
But there is an enemy that gets like really weird.
Yeah.
It's good. It a little bit annoys me that I don't know. I feel like this is a spoiler. Like I get a little bit frustrated with the inevitability in this game and all games like this of like any like supposed survivor that like you're going to track down is going to be long since dead. Like that that's frustrating.
It's the prey problem.
I don't know, partially because like it doesn't seem to really justify, like the game is difficult, but it's not that difficult of like when you find like an established base that's just been like half blown up. It's like there's nothing here that can do that.
Yeah.
But Overall, it's good. Every time I catch a Gary fish, I think of our illustrious pod rad.
Any final thoughts on Subnautica here? Because
good stuff.
Yeah, cool. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, you kind of got Subnautica for me as well, so mm-hmm. count that. The other game I've been playing is Trackmania, which is a little arcade racing game that came off of PlayStation Plus, and it is like the perfect racing game for me.
Hmm.
So it is underneath the veneer of very like realistic, I was going to say, looking tracks or environments. It is completely like silly, nonsensical, no regard for where it would fit in the actual world tracks for you to race through, complete with like loop the loops and crazy huge jumps and all that stuff. But there are also screenshots in the game that could be completely taken out of any, you know, very serious racing sim. So it's a nice mix of the two. You know, you'll start on a dirt road that's straight out of somewhere in the UK, you know, race down that for a second, and then suddenly you see a giant ramp leading into an inverted, you know, S-bend into a loop-the-loop and, you know, all that stuff. So it's kind of silly fun on that front. But the thing I like most about it is that it is very short tracks, at least in the first half of the game.
Right.
It's split up into five levels of difficulty and four types of cars, and you just play through 10 levels per car per difficulty as you advance through the game. And really, like, each track within that is maybe three or four turns, especially, like I said, in the early levels. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's three or four turns, but it's three or four turns that you need to be absolutely perfect through.
Hmm.
Like, one tiny little misstep and your car is just going to fly completely out into nowhere.
Yay!
yeah.
So like a kind of like a rainbow route kind of thing.
Yeah, like there's zero margin for error, and it feels so good to just take, you know, an average track length is probably 30 seconds. Like, you know, you're going to start, you're going to go down a big hill, through an S-bend, over a huge jump, through a loop-the-loop, and then you're done.
Hmm.
And just taking that and mastering it is a really satisfying arc over and over and over again throughout the game. So there's, you know, do the math, 10 times 4 times 5, so 200 tracks in the game. Did mm-hmm. I do that right? So there's 200 different tracks in the game. One out of every five is an actual, like, multi-lap track. Everything else is a rally race style point A to point B track.
Yeah.
So the you know, one out of five tracks, the lap tracks tend to be a bit longer and a bit simpler. But really the fun of the game for me is in these, you know, most of the tracks where you're just going to careen through and have to practice to master a set of turns and then look like a badass when you do it right.
Is this like a kart racer, like, you know, car off-roady? I mean, does it have sort of a, you know, any...
It's... arcadey rally racing, I would say. So the first several cars, like, you have I don't know enough terminology to dub them, but there's two cars that look like they'd be fairly at home in like rally race. There's like a bug that you race that's kitted out for off-roading, and then the final car is an F1 race car that you just happen to take over dirt as often as you take it on the main track. And each of the cars handles very differently than the other. So, you know, the first car, you're kind of just trying to spend as much time possible drifting because it's really set up around drifting, whereas the second car is horrible at drifting, and it's about kind of you know, move very slight adjustments as you go forward. And it's just so responsive that just the tiniest touch is going to send it in a completely different direction.
Yeah.
But the reward, you know, the time invested of 30 seconds to get the feedback and reward of like, hey, you did this, you got a gold medal or a silver medal or whatever, you beat your previous time, is really, really satisfying.
Nice.
Huh.
Yeah.
Do you want to know how dumb and lazy my mind is?
What's that?
Whenever I see Trackmania in a list of games, I always assume that it's a rhythm game.
Yep.
That's a logical conclusion.
Yeah, that's just wrong.
To rhythm, yeah, to the rhythm piece, the soundtrack is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was music composed for the game or what, but just a good little techno beat going under everything that you do.
What are you playing this on?
I'm playing it on PS4.
Cool.
So, it's a very simple game. In concept, like, hey, here's really short tracks, high difficulty, go. And that works really well. The one thing is I'm probably most of the way through the third tier of difficulty, if I'm remembering correctly,
mm-hmm.
and the track length is starting to extend out. So difficulty is going up. That's great. That's what I want. That's what I'm there for. But the length is going up as well, which I don't think is right for what this game does well, in my opinion.
Not in the service.
Right. Because the longer the track is, the kind of, you have to take some of the corners off, because if the entire track is, 3 minutes of needing to be absolutely perfect, no one is going to finish it.
Right.
So you get 3 minutes of needing to be, pretty, pretty good. And that's
three
when
minutes of needing
feeling,
to be. Yeah.
Yeah. 3 minutes to meh. And that is when it starts feeling like every other racing game out there. Where it really, really shines is when it's 30 seconds of really tight, focused racing.
You just iterate better. Like, you're not waiting, 2.5 minutes to hit the one turn that is really messing with you.
Yes, that is exactly it. And kudos to this game, the reset time is instant. So you press the reset button when you screw up, and you are right back at the starting line with no delay whatsoever.
Doing it Burnout Paradise style,
Exactly, yes. So they knew exactly how people were going to interact with this game, and they made sure that it was not frustrating.
Yeah.
So we'll see. As I progress through the levels, maybe the track length will kind of top out and not get too much longer, or maybe that last set of levels is going to be a hellish 15-minute race that's just, again, I'll lose interest and stop playing. But my time with it so far has been really, really cool, and it feels unique because of that brevity.
Yeah, that's good. Cool. I like a nice kind of like low barrier to entry racing game like that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oddly enough, the loop-the-loops are the most boring part of the game.
Well, because probably it's like it's like autopilot. It's like a Sonic game.
Yeah, make sure that you have the right angle going in, and then don't touch anything until you get to the other side. don't touch.
Just leave it.
So yeah, I mean, really, the most fun part of the loop is the 30 meters before the loop.
Right.
The other thing that it has going against it is the camera. So there's two modes. There's a third person behind the car, and then there's like a first person in the car.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no like, you don't see any of the car model. It's just a first person camera.
Right. It's not like a cockpit view.
Yeah, a cockpit view without any cockpit. Like, you don't see a dashboard, you don't see a wheel. There's no context to it. And that is necessary when you're doing some of the more crazy maneuvers, mm-hmm. because there's just no way for a third person camera to be at a good angle for a loop or for some of the crazy, vertical stuff that they do. So it has to go there. I get that. But it forces you into that perspective if you're not already using it whenever you get to that portion. So you've got, on top of having to be perfect and maneuver well throughout the track, you're also going to have the camera jump in on you at a fixed point. I was going to say a random point, but a fixed point. But it's very jarring and can throw you off your game nonetheless. So I don't know how they could have fixed that. I just, I prefer racing in third person, and there's just no good way to transition between the two.
That's too bad.
Yeah, but that really doesn't get in the way of the fun. It is the racing game if you just want to feel like a complete badass and master a track without having to invest a ton of time.
Nice.
And that's me. I've been playing a little more Overwatch, but nothing significant.
Okay. Cool. I'm gonna do one really quick, and then Jolly, you can have the floor with your story. The only thing that I've been playing has been an iOS game called Reigns. That is REIGNS.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Reigns, like a king would do. I reign over this. This is like a little like a systems-based choose your own adventure or almost like an interactive fiction in the style of like a sorcery kind of thing, except all the choices that you make are expressed as basically like Tinder swipes. So like you're presented with basically a deck of cards, and each card represents somebody talking to you or a choice that you're going to make, and you swipe it right in order to say, yep, giddy up, or you swipe it left to say no. And every choice you make based on what they've described is kind of a trade-off, and you have 4 meters that you're trying to not so much optimize as you're trying to balance them so none of them bottoms out. So it's like the church, the people, the military, and your coffers, like your economy. So if the church comes to you and says, oh, we need money for a new cathedral, like and you say yes, your church will go like way up, your money will go like way down, and like the people meter will go down because you're spending money on the church instead of them, right? And if you say no, like not exactly the exact opposite will happen, but there's a little bit of knock-on effect. Like there'll be like minor associations between these. And you're like, you're playing out the rule of this kind of king of the kingdom until you die and your successor comes in and replaces you. So it'll show like the timeline and each king that you play. And then there's a version where you play as the queen as well. But where each ruler that you play gets like a little nickname. So it's like so-and-so the mad or so-and-so the wise. And you get into a bunch of like goofy little situations. Like it's kind of a comedic game. Like if you look at the art style, that'll come through. It's got this very nice, like, almost looks a little bit like Ridiculous Fishing. Kind of like, they're made up of, triangles and simple polygons and stuff. The people who are coming to you. But yeah, it's like a super quick, just like little resource management, choose your own adventure game that has a really fun aesthetic, really snappy writing. And just, if you like those parts of management games or choose your own adventure games, like if you play FTL and you really enjoy the, hey, you get a distress call and this person desperately wants on board, like if you,
always spiders.
But regardless, if you like those little parts, Reigns is a super cool little game that apparently everybody knows about and I just learned about.
I've been looking at it while you've been talking about it, and it's got interesting art for sure too. So like, it's
this is the cutest person being drawn and quartered that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So I've not played it, although I've watched some streams of it, and one thing I do want to add that I at least found really interesting is, although you can die from any of your meters bottoming out, you also die if they max out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, like, for example, if you get, say, the people meter up to the max.
Oh, you got yourself a democracy going.
Well, no, it'll be things like, you have a public... you appear in public and like get trampled in the stampede of people like wanting to meet you.
Oh, geez.
Or like they like a lot of those from what I've seen tend to be like a little bit more ridiculous.
Right.
But, the whole thing's ridiculous. Not just that none of them can be too bad, but they also can't be too good.
Yeah. Okay. I never had that happen where I maxed one out until I died. Most of the time it's like, oh, you just let the military languish and they held a coup and you're done. Stuff like that.
As you do.
Yeah. No, it's neat. Like I've been enjoying that playing on my iPad. I think there's an Android version, and also it's on Steam as well. I'm looking at it on Steam.
I feel like this is becoming some sort of like fringe genre or something, because you have like this, you have the WoG or whatever.
The YoG?
You also have the Shrouded Isle, the one that I played more recently. And it is on Android and on Switch also.
Oh, well, nice. Wasn't there like a Vampire Hunter one?
Oh, man, I know what you're talking about. Like, it's got a super generic name, but it's like Dracula. I know what you mean. Yeah.
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 But yeah, cool.
That's my big one. I've been doing a Hex Rank Live on the Sherlock Holmes The Awakened game, but I am not ready to talk about that yet. I want to wait till I'm finished. So
cool.
I do have one comment about it, though. It makes me laugh that mosquitoes are the one thing that defeats Sherlock Holmes.
Well, he's got that fair skin, you know, from the English Isles. <you know? laughs> Yeah, so Jella, that's all I've been playing. What have you been up to?
Yeah, so I played through another 1.5 chapters of Corpse Party Blood Drive. I'm partially through chapter 3 out of 10. And for people who count, yes, I also had a chapter 0 to start with. So I'm through, I'm now in the 4th chapter. Anyway, there are also 7 EX chapters, so I've got quite a bit more game left. I have a feeling that there's going to be more dodging around of spirits and things. Like I talked about some of the other mechanics the last time where you have talismans and you have ways to hide from spirits and things. But so far it's not too bad. I've only encountered a couple of spirits to date. They're juggling with the story a lot of different threads simultaneously. There's 3 different groups so far and several wild card characters that are in play.
Oh, geez.
So, I mean, there's a lot going on, and so I can't, and then because it builds on all the stuff from the first and the second game, I can't really say too much about what's going on in the storyline, because it's not going to make any sense unless you played the other games, and then it might spoil something. So, I'm limited to speaking about just certain things. I am liking it a little bit better. It's kind of feeling more like a slightly action-oriented Corpse Party, but I'm still going to reserve my judgment for a while because there's still a long way to go and it might still get screwed up. And the Miiverse elements of it may just jack up any sentiment of it being good. I don't know. We'll see. So
when you were chatting in my stream, you seemed a little bit more positive on some of the depictions, right? On some of the gore aspects of it.
I didn't say anything about the gore being good.
Okay.
At all. however, there are some random things. There are text descriptions that are still a thing.
Good.
And some of the text descriptions, like this text description for the thing I just dropped in, I'll read it also. This is kind of scarier than horse teeth. I raised my foot and found a seaweed-like substance that closely resembled a network of blood vessels stuck to the bottom of my shoe.
Blah.
And she's walking through a pile of stuff.
Yeah, so just a dislocated circulatory system. Oh, no.
Yeah, apparently. No. Okay, I don't know whose that is, but I'm walking on it. Oops. So yeah, that's a thing that happened. There's descriptions. I mean, there's some animated stuff, but there's also some stuff. There's also I had a text death happen, which that's kind of the Corpse Party steez. You have in the prior games, you would have a black screen, and then you would have some sounds and some voice acting, and then just some stuff about, oh, this is what happened to them, and it's terrible and horrible. But they leave you to imagine it without actually telling you everything that's going on. And, that happened. But there's also been a me death in this interim. So I don't know how I feel about that. There was a giant mouth that came out of a closet and just ate somebody. But it was a me verse giant pair of lips. And I don't know. It was real weird. And then there wasn't any text and there wasn't any voice acting. It was just that. And then that was the end of it. So I don't know. It's a grab bag. I don't really know how to feel about it exactly. But yeah, so some other things, apparently with some of the action elements, they are trying to bring it in a little bit more, you being careful where you walk, not just because the floorboards will, break underneath your feet and you will go through a hole and injure yourself, or there's shattered glass that will hurt your feet if you walk on it, but also there's tentacle in them thar flesh mounds. There's literally, I just shared an image of they're like telling you there's some tentacles and you got to fight your way out if they happen to catch you.
Well, yeah,
and obviously. Things like that. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. And there's also there's a pyramid head.
Yeah,
the parakeet head.
Pyramid head, but a me version.
Oh, it's the cutest pyramid head.
He's got an axe. He doesn't have a sword, but he's got an axe. And so, okay, that's a thing that happened. But like, yeah. So like, the story's kind of heating up a little bit, and people have done lost their minds. Mm-hmm. They're just like the people in the real world are going crazy because basically, this is not a spoiler to say bad things happened and people died.
What?
And so as a result, the people who are left, like I mentioned this before in the prior games, but basically the people who died inside of the cursed school of Heavenly Host are basically erased from the real world, and their existence is just gone. And like the photos of them, their faces are just black holes, and they don't even have a face anymore in the photos, and nobody remembers who they are, not even their parents, nobody, except for the people who were in Heavenly Host with them.
Right.
And so the characters that are left are kind of all having, like, you know, especially particular characters are having mental breakdowns because everybody thinks they're crazy, ranting about their friend who died, and they're like, who are you talking about? Take your medicine, you know, and that kind of a thing. And like, you know, like one character's mom is at the end of a rope and, you know, like just isn't even responsive anymore to anything that, you know, this character does. And it's just really like a rough situation. And then like, you know, on top of that, the darkening is kind of coming into the real world as well. The kind of infection of the school that drives people crazy. So, you know, like there's a lot of stuff going on and I don't know where it's all going to go. So it's kind of interesting that way. Like story wise, there's more stuff in play right now than there was. It is a little bit more action oriented. They are adding in some text that helps to, I guess, kind of like offset the weirdness of the smiling little me's being on the screen. Like they you know, take that element out a little bit with some of what they've been doing. So I don't know. We'll see if it plays up on its strengths or if it leans on the engine too much. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
So, since I did get a little bit further, I wanted to mention a little bit more about that and say, you know, like I'm warming up to it a little bit more, but I still don't know how I feel about it. I still have a lot of game left. So.
Yeah. Well, I like that you're liking it, that you're warming up to it more. That's good. Yep. You're enjoying the time you're spending with it.
Oh, for sure. Like if I wasn't, well, you would hear a lot of table flipping and I would have gotten real mad real quick.
Yeah, and I'd be upset because I've got a new desk and so I don't want you to flip that. That would be
save the tables.
Yeah.
Right. So that was that. And that's the only game that I've been playing because I otherwise traipsed off to Bastrop and to Austin to ruck a 50K. I did this a few weeks ago, as listeners remember. I did the Brazos Bend 50K here in Houston area. And that one was a very, very flat course. And some fun things happened with the weather. Like it was hot and humid to start. And then it rained and then it got really windy and we were running and, you know, whatever into the headwind, and then it dropped 30 degrees. So that was only difficult really because of the temperature changes and things like that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, it was a good experience, but it wasn't super hard. This one, however, last time I was on, I was talking about how it looked likely to storm. The storms passed the night before, which meant two things. One, it was cool in the morning when we started. And two, once the sun came out, it was really humid and really hot.
Okay.
I was rucking in Bastrop State Park, which was overtaken by a wildfire several years ago. And as a result, like there's lots of black and dead trees everywhere. And there's new growth coming back. There is like plenty of wildflowers out there. And so like the race I was doing was the wildflower trail run. So, you know, like, cool. Aptly named. Nicely named, you know, nice. It had some elevation changes, water crossings, things like that. But between all of the climbing up, you know, all the climbs and descents and water crossings and the heat and humidity and me carrying a ruck on my back, it was a lot harder this time around than the last time. I was the absolute last person finished because nobody else had a ruck on their back.
Okay.
And
wait, so you just like showed up to this marathon like carrying a ruck?
With a ruck. That's fine because like other people who go do these ultras will also have like, there's a guy that I saw at the last race and he's always out at Brazos Bend every time there's an ultra there. And he does the longest distance, I think it is, with a tire strapped to him.
Jesus.
So he has a tire dragged behind him that he, you know, trains with for resistance. So, I mean, it's not uncommon. There's also other events that they run that have specifically a rucking division. So it's not totally uncommon. However, I was the only person out this time with a ruck.
If we ever do the one in Greece, I'm definitely wearing full armor.
Because that makes sense with Greece. But anyway,
well, no, I mean the original marathon.
No.
Sorry, anyway, going back to never mind. Previous conversation.
Yeah. So anyway, I had fun on this. It was enjoyable, but it was also difficult. I face planted. I realized that I was going to take a long time. Okay, so I had to do a 10K loop 5 times.
Okay.
And that's okay, cool. I ran the first 2, and then after that, it started getting hot, and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to be able to maintain a pace like this and be safe. And I might just like pitch off the side of one of these cliffs. I'm not going to do it. You know, right. I'm not going to run anymore. I'm going to hike the rest of the way. So I was hiking and, you know, I was making pretty good time, but I knew that I would be the absolute last person finish. And I felt really bad about it. So on my start of my last loop, right when I was passing by the, you know, start point again, the race director had swung by and stuck his hand out. And I was just like, I looked at him like, yeah. And he's just like, I know, I'm giving you a high five so you can continue. Do you need anything? We're here for you. And, you know, it just made me feel really good because, you know, I was self-conscious that, you know, they were going to be out there. So I apologized. I'm like, look, I'm sorry. I'm going to be out here longer and you guys are going to have to wait. And he was just like, no, we're not waiting. We're here to make sure that you finish your race. And it was really nice. And
sure, that is really cool.
Yeah. And I was totally listening to Lord of the Rings audiobook when I was doing some of it. And the thing is that I had already passed the part where the hobbits were taken to Isengard. And so I didn't have any of the epic running across the plains stuff. I was on like Frodo and Sam in Moria, or not Moria, in Mordor with Gollum, and, you know, like, mostly talking about food.
Like, yeah, I feel like that would be the least motivating thing I could possibly listen to.
Yeah, at that point, like, once I started getting into that, I'm like, okay, I'm going to switch back to music now. But it was funny, though, because I had, you know, got a second wind, and I was getting through the very end of it. I was, you know, picking up speed a little bit. I saw the finish line and I heard them all cheering for me. And then I was like, okay, I haven't been running this whole time. I'm like right there. I'm going to go ahead and run. And
I, you know,
8 feet away from the end of the trail, I went, and I laughed so hard.
Oh, yeah, you have to.
Just like, of course, I have been, you know, refraining from doing this whole time. And then I just went, right face first into the dirt. But that's okay, because like I sprung back up and I, you know, very sheepishly ran across the finish line, and I'm sure my finisher photo this time around is going to be hilarious because I'm going to be covered in dirt and looking like I don't even know what the hell just happened. You know? So anyway, it was pretty funny. And then too, like I asked the photographer guy, did you get a picture? And he's like, no.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to do it again? And I'm like, no. besides which, it wouldn't look candid anymore. And I was like hoping that I might get another meme out of it, because the last one, My very disappointed face when he told me that I had to wait to get my medal, and I was at the end of the race and I was like, done, you know? And his, you know, I've been using that as a meme ever since. I've been putting all kinds of words all over that and using that as meme material. So I was hoping that somebody caught a photo of my falling so that I could use that as my new meme. But overall, I'm stronger despite the fact that this was a harder thing. My recovery was a lot faster, and yeah, it was interesting. I definitely feel more prepared for the next event in a couple of weeks. If I fail that event, the Hurricane Heat 12-hour over in Austin, it will be not because I am unprepared, but because like my spinal stenosis will flare up or something, and my shoulder will give out or something like that.
Yeah.
You know? Like, because I was out there like all day, so you know, and I didn't wither and die, and I was still, you know, good to go. I got to test out, you know, all the things that I adjusted and learned from the last event. So, but yeah, like I totally felt like I was in Morrowind or something like that because you know,
I'm running around that destroyed landscape.
You're going through like a destroyed landscape, partially destroyed landscape. Then you're looking through all the ferns and in the forest, and you're watching all these flowers bloom. It's like, do I need to be harvesting these cacti? Like, I, you know. Well, I kind of, you know, the question that, you know, when Dennis posted this question, the first thing I thought of was this weekend. You know, I took a ton of photos and I put them up on my Instagram. So definitely, if you don't follow me there, then you are missing out on all the wonderful fun pictures of my real life video game. So
nice. So Jala, as somebody who is close to you, I hope that you take this to heart when I say it. If you fell down, I would wait to see that you got up, and then I would start laughing. Like I would I would still laugh like hell. But
and then I would punch the fuck out of you.
Well, of course, yeah, because I would deserve it. But you have to understand it's funny. Yeah. I would laugh and clap my hands.
Too, but like if somebody I knew was there and was laughing at me, I'd punch them.
Oh yeah,
I would be very upset with you. But like it's fine for you to laugh at me and not actually have been there to see.
Oh
it.
That's okay.
That's acceptable. But like I totally own it. That's the thing that happened. It was funny. I was just like a fucking course. You know, like I'm at the very end of this race. I am literally like right there, right at the end of the train. And you know what's weird is that when I was done, you know, the race director was, you know, like also, you know, laughing with me about the whole thing. And he was like, do you need medical? Are you okay? And I was just like, oh, no, I'm fine. And then I realized, like, I have blood on my hand. I'm like, what the fuck is the blood coming from? And then it turns out that I cut my thumb. Of all you would think I would have, like, cut my knee or something.
Yeah, get a scrape, yeah.
No, I somehow sliced my thumb open, and so I was bleeding from my thumb. I'm like, that's fucking weird. Like, not what I would expect from, you know, falling during a hike, but whatever.
Well, however ignominious, I believe that's how you pronounce that, however ignominious your end was, I'm very happy that you finished it. Congratulations on finishing that crazy long race.
Oh yeah, it was actually a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. I made some new friends. A lot of people were like cheering me on the entire time. All the people at the aid stations were awesome. And you know, like as soon as I saw the aid station dudes at the end, you know, and they had come from the middle point aid station, they were picking up. I was like, dude, you missed it. Remember how I was telling you that I was tired and I was not running, you know? And then I thought it was a good idea. No.
Yeah.
Not a good idea. It's kind of like when you're in Morrowind and then you're like, I think I can kill that creature over there. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, fuck, it's going to kill. I'm going
to
die.
If you're stopping to think about it, the answer is no.
At that point, I didn't have enough energy to think about it. Yeah. I just did. And that was the wrong choice.
Ignominious. Go ahead. Sorry.
I met a wrong end to use a corpse partyism. So.
Oh, well, that's quite a story.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Yeah. That's okay. I totally had all this wonderful, fun vegan food over in Austin. Austin is very wonderful for people who eat diverse types of diets because they have something for everybody.
That that place that we ate the last day of Austin, the Mom's Cafe, Mother's Cafe, something like that, Mother's Garden.
Yeah,
Mother's Cafe. Mother's Cafe. That was quite tasty. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
There's plenty of other places I could show you. And man, I had the best vegan ice cream ever. But that's for another story, another day.
Yeah. Well, so. Is that everything, Jala?
That is quite enough.
Okay. Do you all want to button it up?
Buttons.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to level number 241. Really appreciate you taking the time. Hope that you enjoyed it. It's been a little bit of a long episode, so I'm going to keep this short. You know the usual things, ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. If you want to check out the Patreon, that is a thing you can do. But most of all, come back next week, and if you get a chance and you meet somebody who would like the show, consider passing the word along.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, for the level, I have been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia, at GreenLaser73 on Twitch.
I've been David Moneysmith on the interwebs.
And I'm Jellachan in places.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, I only have two, and I'm not really attached to either of them. I just want to get them out. It's a hymn. Referring to Charles Martin.
That's actually pretty good.
And then the clock stuck out more than the yaks.
I have three.
Okay.
Thumper gets even. Dances with tea bags.
Oh, no.
I had that.
And then 3 minutes to meh.
What was that in reference to?
Dennis's discussing of the racing game.
Okay.
So I was going to have that, but I couldn't remember if we had said that before.
No.
I'll count that as a vote for 3 minutes to meh.
Sure. So I had, this is too long, but I still enjoy it. Getting swallowed by a giraffe is like riding a water slide.
That was from the pre-roll, my friend.
Yeah.
Good one.
Yeah, that wasn't pre-roll. That was right before the multiplayer.
Yep. very, very serious racing sim.
Okay.
And this one I feel like wouldn't work, but just take out of context, I enjoy an action oriented corpse party.
Okay.
I had dances with tea bags. I had 3 minutes to meh. And then I also had dislocated circulatory system.
Circulatory system. So I am. So by votes, it is dances with tea bags and 3 minutes to meh. Even though I said dances with tea bags, I really regret having said it.
Well,
I think it's okay to skip that one.
Well, to be honest, like I like some of the other titles better than I like the ones that got the most votes.
So. Yeah. So of the ones that got votes, it's 3 minutes to meh. Jala, do you want to make a do you want to make a case for one of the others?
I think that Thumper Gets Even is pretty funny.
Yeah. But it's pretty good.
I kind of like It's a Me.
it's a him.
It's a him.
Yeah.
That's...
Why don't you put it to a vote?
Oh yeah.
It's been a while since we let the people vote.
Yeah, so I think that they limit.
Don't let your people stat get too high.
So people will hear this episode after they cast the vote. So what I'm going to do, because our voting system restricts the restricts the number of candidates that you can get, let's basically just do a draft. I'm going to set myself as first in the draft and say 3 minutes to meh. So that'll be one of them. Let's see here, going by the intro order, so that would be Dennis.
Yeah, I'm all for dislocated circulatory system.
Okay. And then David?
I think I'm going to have to go with It's a Him.
Okay. Angela?
Thumper Gets Even.
Okay. And then people will know which one which one of us they agree with after they listen to the entire episode.
Yeah.
How's that sound?
I also kind of like dislocated circulatory system, especially out of context, but oh, yeah. You know, whatever. We'll see.
It's got that ring to it.
It references the game. Yeah, one of the games we talk about too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll put that into the chat.
Cool. Okay. Also, you guys, like, go look at those photos. Like, click on the link for my Instagram dump photo dumps that I posted, and uh-huh. then scroll through them and look through them. There's like lots nice. Of photos.
I like this middle one, the second one. That's the kind of the shady grove.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, it's like there's more of like kind if you follow the link to the actual Instagram and then click through, because like you can post up to 10 photos per. Dump
on there.
So,
yeah.
Sweet.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go because I've got a pack so I can leave in the morning.
Yes, yeah. Sir.
All right.
Yeah. Let's go.
See you guys around.
All right. Take care, everybody. Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.